Hi, everyone. Welcome to the West Wellness and Longevity Podcast. My name is Tara West, and I am a functional nutritionist, passionate about how we can use food as medicine and truly heal our bodies. I'm also obsessed with longevity with a love for peptides, fitness, and all the latest and greatest biohacking resources. I spend hours upon hours looking at the latest research and implementing them into my own life and in my practice with my clients. I look forward to sharing all of this wonderful information with you. Hey guys, quick reminder, this podcast is for information purposes only and not meant to treat or diagnose. So please consult with your personal health practitioner prior to implementing anything that you hear about on this show. Now on to the next episode. All right, welcome back everyone. Kind of had one of those days today. I got almost all the way through recording this episode and realized that my microphone had come unplugged. So yeah, it's just one of those days. So here I am, round two of recording this episode for y'all. Before we get started, a couple of things. As some of you may notice, the Peptique lost its credit card processing again this past week. And for those of you who aren't super familiar with how this works, the research peptide company is considered high risk. And so traditional credit card processors don't want to work with us. And there are workarounds for that, but they're not very pleasant. We are becoming more and more scrutinized in this space. People do not like the fact that we sell research peptides. People do not like the fact that we are really trying to promote wellness and health and preventative care and optimization over traditional ways of aging and just taking care of your health in general, no matter how old you are. And so because of that, and FDA, Big Pharma, and all those hands that are involved, we are having more and more roadblocks put in front of us. Now, I realize me even saying this out loud, particularly on a podcast, could somewhat put a target on my back, but I want to be really transparent and honest about it. I mean, we've gotten this far, so why not? That being said, I don't know if we're going to bring credit card processing back or not. When this high-risk option that we were using fell off and it wasn't even great to begin with, we were given a second option. But it only allowed for a $300 maximum purchase. It had a high fail rate, meaning that it's being flagged as fraudulent with a bunch of your credit card providers. And for its security reasons, it would often ask for things like a social security number, among other things. And I just thought that was really invasive, not something that I felt comfortable with. So I decided to opt out of that option, even though it would have allowed us to continue credit card processing. So if we get lucky and one comes back online, that would be great. Right now, we're offering discounts for alternative payments so you can save even more money with things like Zelle and ACH/eCheck/eDebit options. And most of you have really transitioned over to that payment processing very beautifully, I might add. Thank you for that, the support there. And I also realize that a lot of you listening buy your research peptides from other places that may still have credit card processing, and I totally get that. But this is going to be the trend. I kind of stay in the loop with what's going on, and this is happening across the board with a lot of different research peptide companies and companies that don't even like sell research peptides, but sell things associated with research peptides, like injectable pens and things like that. It's just kind of getting a little nutty. So this is going to become the trend. I've considered adding some cryptocurrency options to me when I wasn't in that space. Now that I understand it, it makes sense to me. But before I'm, you know, was a peptide research company owner, it always felt a little weird to me. So I haven't quite gotten there yet. But I will say I would love your feedback on that. If you think that is something that would interest you, being able to pay via cryptocurrency, I'm going to put a link to a survey in the show notes, and you can just click yes or no. Super easy. I would actually really love your feedback on that to see kind of what the perception is out there among my audience. Okay, moving on. I just got back from vacation, and so I'm just not very prepared for this week's episode. So I kind of jumped ship on what I was going to do. And then, of course, the recording thing happened. It wasn't very helpful. And I decided to go back to the Q&A only because there were so many questions that didn't get answered last time. And I don't even know that I'm going to be able to finish them this time. I'm hoping that I can get through a lot of them. And so I thought, you know what, this is just a really easy thing to do. Y'all tend to really like these because I can cover a lot of topics in a short period of time. And if I repeat myself because I I'm a ding-dong and forgot to make a note on where I left off, but I look back and I think I'm starting in the right place. So if I repeat a question, I apologize. So we're just going to dive in. So I kind of keep this short and to the point because I know you guys don't like things going too long and I don't blame you. So let's just start with the first one. This is a great one, I think, to start with. Selank has worked so well for me. I'm nervous to be off of it for a period of time. Is Cimax my best option while I'm off Selank? Acts for me like an SSRI and specifically for anxiety. I'm just wondering if there's anything else I should try in those in-between stages. So yes and no. If it really was anxiety and it was kind of that calming effect, the difference is that Selank works on GABA, which is the calming neurotransmitter. So the effects of that is calming, reduced anxiety, smooth, grounded feeling. I will tell you, this is how Selank works for me. You've heard me say this a million times. I stay in that fight or flight. I don't get super anxious, but can struggle with a bit of anxiety here and there. And I've noticed when I've taken it situationally for those things, it really helps calm the nerves down, okay? Max works more on dopamine, serotonin, BDNF factor. So you're going to see more things like focus, motivation, mental clarity. So can Cimax help with anxiety? Yes, but indirectly, where I think Selank works directly with it. So you're definitely not going to get the same impact with it. I want to reiterate that both of these are neuromodulators, okay? What that means is they help improve the existing pathway, whether you need more or something or less of something. So it's very different than a pharmaceutical in the sense that a pharmaceutical forces a response or blunts a response, okay? And so with the neuromodulators, it's actually telling your brain to work more efficiently within these pathways. And it's, think of it as almost in a healing way. So you get a long-term effect from it after even just one cycle. And so you can definitely cycle it multiple times. I'm a big fan of that, particularly if this is something that you're struggling with. So you think of it as kind of getting everything back on track, taking a break from it. Because you also want you want your response to it to remain sensitive, because this is one that you can build a tolerance for and lose a sensitivity to. And so then you take a break, and then when you kind of maybe feel some of that stuff creeping back, you cycle back on it, and it really helps maintain that sensitivity to it. So you definitely want to cycle it, and think of it. Don't think about it in the sense that the second you get off of it, then you're going to lose the benefits of it, because that's not how this works. Thankfully, that's what makes these modulating peptides so beautiful, okay? All right, next question. Hold on, I lost my place. Okay, in line with the question before, I read that you can reconstitute Cimax or Selank for nasal delivery using the same product, but a nasal sprayer and a different recon water. Is that correct? Yes. That's absolutely correct. And breaking news here, in probably about 6 weeks, we are going to be releasing a line of the nasal peptides, something I've been wanting to do for a while. And as we're growing, I think I'm super excited about this. So for those of us who get injection fatigue, I know I get there a lot, or maybe you're traveling or whatnot, whatever, you just don't want to take the injection. We're going to offer some of these, including Selank and Cimax, as the nasal intranasal format. And what you are asking about the recon water, reconstitution water, is yes, typically that's done with deionized water. And the reason, the difference between that and backwater, is backwater can be harsh on the mucosal lining and the nasal cavity. And so it can cause problems there, dryness, swelling, sensitivity, irritation. Sometimes it gets too raw in there and can cause like a nosebleed at more of the extreme side. So it's not very comfortable to take intranasally. The downside to that is that it doesn't have the preservative of the backwater. So it's even more important that you use it within the 30-day time frame, and that you definitely keep it refrigerated and away from light so it doesn't degrade so fast. So even little things like taking it in and out of the fridge multiple times a day, you want to make sure you're very quick with that. We are going to be using the amber bottles for the nasal spray to help preserve that. And so anyway, but the answer is yes, that is correct. Okay. I have recently started adding Iperalin plus CJC 1295 to my peptide regimen. I tried filling my syringes with both the IPA CJC and Retta. When I did that, there was some bubbling in the syringe. Then when I tried to inject them, the syringe seemed to get stuck and was very difficult to inject. This has happened both times that I tried it. Why did this happen? Should I just inject them separately from now on? I'm going to go out on a limb here. Some of these answers are more simple. We think it's some complicated thing. I'm going to guess when you try to inject multiple peptides, you're going to get more air in that syringe naturally just by the nature of the vacuum seal and how that works and moving the syringe in and out of a vial multiple times. And so that's more than likely what those little bubbles are that you're seeing, because you see that in general anyway, but you're going to see more of that when you try combining multiple vials of peptides. I'm also going to guess is the multiple pricks. So you're putting it twice into the vial, the rubber stopper in the vial, which will dull it because those things can be pretty thick. And then you're going to use a third time to inject it into yourself. And so those little syringes, those little insulin syringes, they dull very, very fast. And so I'm going to guess that that's what's going on here. Could be wrong, but that seems like the most reasonable explanation for that. As far as should you inject them separately, I kind of would in this situation. I don't know how often you're taking the retatide, but if you're taking it once a week, that's not a big deal. If you're doing microdosing multiple times a week, that could be a little more irritating. But I would say, yeah, I would keep those separate, because even if you get the smallest amount of the other peptide into the other vial, which is very common, it can start causing some issues. Those two I would just keep separate. Okay, are there any peptide or amino blends that you would recommend to help treat asthma caused by allergies? I think that there's two. KPV is the first one, because if you're having that mast cell response that is a histamine response often associated with allergies, KPV is going to calm the inflammation. It's an anti-inflammatory peptide. I also think with asthma, because it helps open up the vasodilation and stuff, that VIP could be a really good one to try. And I think those two together might actually really help with that. With the VIP, little teeny tiny baby doses, you normally take it twice a day. You want to start really low and slow on that one. The KPV has less side effects. You may experience some flushing, lightheadedness, that sort of thing with the VIP. So I always tell people to start really slow on that one. And if you haven't done either one of them, I would try them separately first, particularly the VIP. The KPV rarely causes any kind of side effects with people. So just know that. But the VIP, you can have some side effects too. Okay, next question. How do you know what peptides you can stack in one pen at the same time? It's not this most simple question. The pH differences seem to come into play here where they're not as compatible. I like to keep a lot of my things separate. Or if I am combining them in the same syringe, I want to make sure that I'm injecting them right away and not letting them sit. Once you let them sit, they could be on different degradation levels and things can start to mix in a way that impacts the other peptide. You know, it's not the easiest question to answer of, well, this is what you can put together and this is what you can't. But I would think if you look at what their pH levels are and if they're somewhat compatible in there and you're injecting them right away, you're probably going to be okay. That's probably an oversimplified answer to that, but that's normally the way that I approach it. Okay. I am considering melanotan 1, but wondering if there are contradictions for autoimmune diseases because I have systemic lupus. My sun time has become more limited as I've gotten older, even though I've been in remission for over 20 years. I know my skin is more sensitive on my upper arms, my neck, and my chest, and if in the sun too long without zinc oxide, I will develop a red itchy rash, which has ruined many vacations, and I'm wondering about getting a tan with the peptide, which would maybe offer some skin protection and some color. So it's not the easiest question in the world to answer in the sense that you're talking about autoimmune disease. I will say there is some evidence that suggests that melanotan 1 can actually help support autoimmune, but everyone responds differently to these things. I would say start it and try it on a very low dose. I can tell you from personal experience, and I don't have autoimmune disease, so again, this is very unique to the individual. But I recently got back from a vacation and the sun was crazy. I went on a girls' trip to Scottsdale last week and they were experiencing like record highs of like 106 degrees. And leading up to that, I had been taking melanotan 1, preparing for that. And I was in the sun quite a bit. And I put sunscreen on some strategic places, but I didn't get burned. Not even close to getting burned. And for the amount of time that I was outside, that's just not really normal for me. I'm fairly fair complected and have been prone to burn pretty easily. So I definitely think it can cause some protection for that. But I would just try it before you go on your vacation, more of a loading phase, and start maybe at half of the recommended dose and see how you respond to it with maybe some light sun exposure prior to. I would just hate for you to have a bad reaction to it and then that ruin your vacation as well. But I would say most of the evidence suggests that it actually could be good for autoimmune. If you're having that bad of a reaction to the sun as well while you're there, you may consider using KPV to help keep that inflammatory response to the sun at bay. Just a thought. All right. Well, before I move on, let me say, it does protect you from getting sunburned as easily. Without question, that's proven. So that's why I'm thinking that it could be a good thing if what's happening when you get in the sun is causing that strong of a reaction. But just be really low and slow with it. Okay, moving on. I am a 62-year-old woman who was very active. I keep my body fat fairly low because of some menopausal fat distribution, I see a little bit more fat around my middle. I do take hormone replacement therapy. I'm wondering what's the best peptide would be for up to 5 pounds of fat loss, just dialing in my physique a little bit more to see my abs separate again. I lift weights 5 days a week and have been a bodybuilder for years. I walk daily, get 10,000 steps. I'm trying to dial in my diet a little more, not be too restrictive. I tried AOD 9604, but probably not long enough. My provider of bioidentical hormone replacement therapy suggested microdosing a GLP. I was a little concerned about that because I already have trouble trying to eat an appropriate amount of calories from my exercise level, so I don't need appetite suppress, and I don't have unwanted food noise or cravings. Okay, I still think Retta in particular, if you did retatrutide, very low dose, you could microdose it. The starting recommended dose for that is 0.5 milligrams or 500 mcgs. You could start way lower than that, 250 mcgs, and see how you do. Because it has that third component, that glucagon component that helps raise the metabolic rate, and people on it just lose more fat. And I find people that are already optimized, which it sounds like you are, do really well on it. You may try pairing that with something like tesamorelin, because it's a growth hormone peptide that is known to help with that visceral midsection fat. Although someone that sounds as lean as you already are losing 5 pounds, I think would be very difficult, if I'm being, not impossible, but very difficult. But this could help with that body recomp that it sounds like you're looking for. And I personally like to pair tesamorelin with AOD 9604, because I think AOD on its own isn't going to get you the result you want. But synergistically, I think it works really well with something, particularly for midsection fat, like tesamorelin. With tesamorelin, it's not uncommon to get a lot of water retention in the beginning, and that could be very disconcerting for some people. It typically goes away, but it's why I tell people if you're worried about that, I think the starting dose is 1 milligram a day. Cut that in half. See how you do on it. Go very low and slow and work your way up. If you don't want to do the tesamorelin, you could try something like 5-amino-1 with AOD, and that can sometimes jumpstart things and get people out of that rut. So those would be my go-tos right out of the gate. MOTSI is another one that helps increase insulin sensitivity and that sort of thing, especially if you're not on a GLP and does not have any appetite suppression. So there's a lot of different ways you can look at it, but I really think your best bet, if you really are thinking you need 5 pounds, you're going to do best on very low dose of retatrutide, not tirzepatide, because it has that fat burning component. And maybe layering in a tesamorelin with an AOD or a 5-amino-1 with an AOD. Okay, let's see. Peptide timing, best time and second best, i.e. CJC and IPA, best at night or on an empty stomach. But if you go to bed straight after dinner, would it be best to take it in the morning on an empty stomach? Which is ideal and which is second best? Well, we should probably be going to bed on an empty stomach anyway. Let me just I'm not going to get on my soapbox about that. Minus some people that really have blood sugar issues, it's really more beneficial to not have eaten anything a couple of hours prior to going to bed. And so the best time, in my opinion, to take that would be fasted before bed. If that's not a possibility, and for some people with schedules and everything else, I realize it's not, then I would take it in the morning fasted for sure. And when I say in the morning, right when you wake up, that's when you're getting that big surge of growth hormone. So you want to really maximize the benefit of the peptides with that. And so you jump out of bed, you take it, you're fasted, you're working with your natural growth hormone, and that's a win-win. That would be second best. And they're both really good. I mean, I would say the difference between those two is very minimal. But if you're asking for the gold standard, most people think taking it at night fasted is best. But I think you can equally get a wonderful result in the morning. And then some people take it both in the morning and at night. Okay? Okay. Can't read that one. This one got me when I thought I was recording last time. Too many typos. Okay. I have been running a cycle of MOTSI to help with insulin sensitivity. It has been wonderful and brought my fasted blood sugar levels down. However, my current cycle will end at the end of next month, and I'm concerned about my blood sugar will return to my old levels. What do you think about cycling in humanin in the interim until I can return to MOTSI? I think humanin's a great peptide, but if you're really talking about insulin sensitivity on its own, and you want to cycle onto something else, I would say 5-amino-1-MQ would be more of my go-to for that specific thing. And there's some people, some schools of thought out there that are suggesting that you don't have to cycle MOTSI, although I tend to like to cycle it. But I would say 5-amino-1-MQ would be better than that. Anyway, so it's really kind of up to you. You could try both and see how you do. Obviously, you would try them separately if you've never used them before, but that would be my thoughts on that. Okay, I have hit my goal weight on 2.5 milligrams of GLP-2, meaning tirzepatide. I've been on it for 6 months and want to give my receptors a break. What is the best option to use during the break to maintain results? I need something that won't cause fatigue, as I already have issues with fatigue. And how long of a break should I take from the GLP? Well, this is the million-dollar question everyone wants to know. And I think it's going to be different and unique for everyone, so let me say that. As far as what to take, I would say if you struggle with fatigue, I would stay away from cagtide. I would also stay away from orforglipron, not so much because of the fatigue, although that is a known side effect, not as common, but you're working still with the GLP receptors. And if you really want to give those a break, then we have to kind of shift gears. So if the food noise is a concern and appetite suppression is something that you're still wanting, I think tesofensine can be really good. It's not for everyone. It's a stronger research compound. It's not a peptide, but it can have some crazy appetite suppression. And in most people, it doesn't make them tired. If anything, it acts more as a stimulant and can give you some energy. Some people report feeling a little jittery on it. So you'd really just have to try it and see how you do. The other things I can think of, if food suppression is not so much of the goal, or what you're concerned about, you could try some things like MOTSI, 5-amino-1, AOD9604. I would not take the AOD9604 again on its own. I would combine it with the 5-amino-1 or the MOTSI. Those can all help a little bit with insulin sensitivity to try to keep that at bay as well. You can take some of those in combination with each other. So it just kind of depends what's most important to you. You can also do things like there's a supplement, which I'm sure most of you have heard of, called CaliCurb. And it's just more of a natural supplement that can really help in the same way that a GLP does. It's not going to be nearly as strong. And so I think the downside to that is that a lot of people have to take multiple pills a day for it to really work. And that can kind of be annoying. With the tesofensine, you take it early in the morning because it can disrupt sleep. You take one capsule a day usually. But there are other options out there. And so you might look into all of those and kind of decide what will work best for you. As far as how long to cycle off, I mean, to really reset the receptors, because these things have long half-lives and they build in our system. And a lot of people report still reaping the benefits of these several months after you get off of it. So I will also say too, once you've been off of it for a while, you don't always regain the same sensitivity that you did when you first started taking it. I would say that's true for most people. You're going to regain some sensitivity, but it's never going to be like that first time the first time that you took it. So just kind of keep that in mind for most people, not everyone. But I would say, 8 to 12 weeks. If you can make it 12 weeks, great. But I would say probably at least 6 to 8 before you'd want to cycle back on. Okay, let's see. Oh, this has a lot of stuff. Let's break this one down. What peptide stack would you recommend for someone with long COVID experiencing core morbidities such as mast cell activation syndrome, orthostatic intolerance / POTS, fatigue, ADHD, and connective tissue disorders, hypermobility spectrum, which causes constant muscle tension and pain. Okay, it's a lot to break down. The first thing I'm going to say is you definitely got some inflammation going on. Some of this autoimmune stuff sounds like we know that long COVID or that COVID in general causes a massive inflammation response. If you look at people that have long COVID, what they're showing is that that inflammation never resolves itself, which is what happens with autoimmune. I think you can look at the two. I'm not a doctor, so don't hold me to this, but in my brain, how I think about it, you can look at those very similar, okay? You're talking about things like POTS and the fatigue that comes with that. And even ADHD, we can chalk up to neuroinflammation a lot of times as well, okay? So we need to get the inflammation down. That should help with some of the constant muscle tension and pain too, because that can also be exacerbated by inflammation. So the first two things that come in mind are thymus and alpha-1 and KPV. And I would do those because your system is very sensitive right now. So I would do those separate of each other, at least for a couple of weeks to see how you respond, particularly the thymus and alpha-1. The KPV you could layer in a few weeks later because the safety profile for that is actually very clean. And at that point, you would know how the thymus and alpha-1 is impacting you. So the thymus and alpha-1 acts as a immune modulator. We were talking about Selenk being a neuromodulator. So it's this really smart peptide that knows what's going on in your immune system. If you need something to be pushed, you need the immune system to work harder on something, or if you need the immune system to not be so overstimulated where it's causing the opposite problem. So it knows which way to go and helps modulate the immune system to get it back to a healthier baseline, okay? And then the KPV comes in and really calms down that inflammation that sounds like you've probably been dealing with for a long time. And I think those two together would be a great place to start. I think they could actually be a life changer for you just based on how I know these things work. And so gonna throw that out there. There are other ones you could try after that, but for the sake of time, I'm not gonna go into those, but I would definitely start with those two. Okay. I have cycled both CJC and IBA and IGF-1, LR3 without seeing any muscle mass gain despite progressively overloading on strength training and eating enough protein. I'm also using Retta, Tessa, Motsi to help with belly fat, but there's still no improvement. Any tips? Well, you said cycled those first two, so I'm assuming you're not taking all of those together. If you were taking all those together, I'd tell you to back off. That's a lot to be taking at once. And sometimes when we overload the system, it tends to hold on to things because it doesn't know what to do. And you've kind of put it into like shock. And so it just kind of freaks out on you. I've seen that happen to people before. But assuming that that's not what you're saying, that you're currently using Retta, Tessa, and Motsi, let's start with those. Retta, you may need to go up a little bit on it. You know, you may not be using it for actual weight loss. It sounds like what you're wanting is body recomposition. So you may need to go up on that one a little bit more. The Tessa can also cause you to really retain water, even though, and I said this earlier, even though it's known to help with that midsection visceral fat, it may take a little bit longer in your cycle to actually see the benefits of that. So I would stick with that one. And then you may layer in an AOD 9604 even over a Motsi, but I would say I would up your Retta and give your Tessa time to work and get through those initial side effects, and then consider layering in AOD 9604. What I will tell you, and I should have mentioned this in the question before about AOD 9604, I personally like a higher dose of that one. I know the starting recommended dose, depending on what you're looking at, my peptide guide says 300 mcgs. I like to titrate up around 1 milligram. I know that sounds like a lot. You know, 600 mcgs is doubling it to 1 milligram. And you can take that one for a longer time. So, you like to cycle these things, but there are some research models that suggest taking it up to 6 months at a time. I'm not saying you do that, but it may just take a little bit of time. But for true fat loss, I think upping your Retta and maybe doing microdosing of it, like as far as breaking up the dosing from like once a week to three times a week with these other things might really help, okay? Because you still want to lean out. And if you're wanting to make the gains in the muscle mass, you can lean out and do that at the same time. All right. Oh, other thing I will say, and this is a classic sign of someone that you may need hormone replacement therapy, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. So if your hormones are not optimized and you really wanted to put on muscle mass, if your testosterone is tanked, that's also going to be really hard. So that's something else that I would consider if you haven't had your hormones tested and see if that might also help get you back on track. And I probably should have said that first, in all honesty, so I apologize for that. There's just a lot of different ways to approach this, but those are a couple things that I would consider. Okay, would you recommend injecting Clo and or any peptide that is good for skin and connective tissue regeneration directly at the site where you are wanting it to work the most? For example, if you are getting hollowness in your face, can you inject it directly into facial tissue for better results? If not, where do you suggest injecting? But first of all, never ever inject any of these things in your face. I don't care what anyone tells you. This is not that kind of thing. It's not like filler. So I don't want people to get confused with this, okay? It's not going to help with that hollowness. Hollowness usually comes from fat loss in the face. It can come from the shifting of the skin in the sense of, your skin starts to, it's where you get the jowls and stuff like that. So the fat that you had is now kind of lowering into the jowls of the face instead of being higher up in the cheeks. No amount of glow injecting in your face, which would be a horrible idea, is going to help with that. So let me just say that you may get some skin elasticity overall, some collagen benefits. You may say the skin looking better overall, but if you've got real hollowness going on, Clo and Glow aren't going to work miracles in that sense. I love both of those stacks. I've done them both. I've seen skin texture and quality improvement in them both, but not to that level. So I want to be very transparent about that. The other thing is, you're going to hear a lot of different opinions about injecting it close to the injury site or where you want it to benefit the most. This is my opinion. Please don't send me an email about how I'm wrong. We can all have our opinions. Based on what I know and how I interpret the science and the data that is out there, because we don't have a ton, this stuff works systemically and it kind of knows in our body where to go. And so injecting it in the site that you want it to heal or improve is more, I think, of like the psychology behind it and less about the actual effectiveness of it. So when I inject these things, I normally inject Clo, Glow, BPC, TB, you know, whichever one I'm doing in the glute area. That's where I get the least amount of injection site reactions. And so I'd like to inject there, particularly because that one can cause a bump. And so that's just my opinion. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Okay, let's see. I'm going to do one more. And I know which one I want to do because this is from Jenny. Shout out to you, Jenny. She's part of the Women's Peptide Collective. And she has asked me about this multiple times. So I feel like I need to dedicate the time just for you, Jenny, to answer this. And I think this is a pretty common question. So her question is, could you please do a segment on injection site lumps? I've been on my peptide journey for about a year now and only do glutes, and I have a permanent lumps and bumps all over them and try to lax ball, but nothing gets rid of them. Okay. The truth is some people are just more prone to these, okay? And it may mean that for a little while, but you back off on some of the injections or you try not to take them as often to give your body time to kind of get through these. This is something, particularly when I'm doing anything with GHKCU in it, that I've struggled with. I have completely quit injecting in my abdomen for the most part, just because I get bumps and lumps. And then obviously they're more prominent. You can see them more when you're doing that in the abdomen, especially if you're lean in the gut area. So I also have shifted different places. Sometimes I'll do them on the outer thigh, okay? Inner thigh I would never do for me. That's super painful. But outer thigh, you know, I'll kind of pinch some skin there and do it. I tend to carry a little more fat around the arms. I just have thicker arms. I think my grandmother. And so I'm able to inject some. Sometimes I'll inject GLP into the back of the arm where there's a little more fat there. So that's one thing you can do. I know you're saying you inject in the glute and all that, but you may actually even spread it out even more. You can add backwater to the syringe before you inject it. That's going to help make it a little more liquid. So hopefully it doesn't ball and knot up like that. That's one thing you can do. I also prefer a 1/2-inch length syringe over a 5/16-inch syringe. And the most common ones are 5/16-inch. But the 1/2-inch is just a tad bit longer. It goes a little bit past that initial layer of the skin and tends to cause less of these injection sites. Now, I'm sure, Jenny, if you're listening, what you're thinking is like, I've tried all those things. So I think we've talked a little bit about that, and I hear you. Some of the other things you can do is make sure that your peptide is at room temperature, so you put it in the syringe and it's not cold. I also have a Thermagun. So a Thermagun is something, it's like a handheld massage tool, and you could start to use that Thermagun on those areas right after you inject, in the area that you injected on and the areas that are already there. There are rare cases where sometimes you have to go have them broken up by like a laser or something like that. So that's something that you may consider. But in general, those are the best ways to offset those lumps and bumps. In my experience, the two biggest things that have helped me the most, or three, I would say, are the longer syringe length, the moving the spaces around, so not just injecting in the glute, the abdomen, but moving, you know, every week I'm moving around the injection site. So sometimes it's my arm, sometimes it's my glute, sometimes it's my legs, combination of those throughout the week. Extra backwater helps. And then like the Thermagun really can break some of that up. So if you're doing that consistently, that could help. I have never done this. I've also heard of people adding a little bit of KPV to their injections, and that can help with that reaction. I think that may help more towards like the itchiness and that sort of thing, because of that anti-inflammatory effect it has. But you may try that as well. So I am going to stop there. Let's see where we're at with time. Ooh, see, yep, 40 minutes. There we go. Way too long. Anyway, couple of things real quick. If you are a woman and you are new to peptides, or you've been in peptides for a while, you just want a group of women that you can bounce thoughts, ideas, questions off of, it's a free group that I've created. We're not censored there, at least not yet. Please go join. That link is in the show notes as well. We have a lot of exciting things coming up. I'm still working on the hair serum. It's just taken longer than I thought. We're getting a ton of positive response on the GHKCU Snap Skin Serum. Everyone seems to be loving that. So that makes me so happy. I know it's one of my personal favorites. I use it twice a day, every day. And oh, the nasal spray. That's all coming out soon. So just hang in there with me. We're moving as fast as we can on these things. If you have any questions, email me. If I don't respond, bug me again. I get inundated with, particularly the days that I launch the podcast episodes, I get a lot of emails. I've also been traveling more lately, so sometimes I miss them, or they go into my junk folder, which I try to check more often. So if I'm late in responding, though, that may have happened. And I think that's it for now, y'all. So till next time, have a blessed day.